Okay. Good afternoon. After a very good lunch provided by our hosts and a bit of a break, if we could have everybody's attention, please. We are still waiting for some of the speakers, so we're going to slightly change the order of the program. We're going to begin with the report from the WBU International members that will be presented by Larry Campbell. Larry, if we could start with you, about 10 minutes or less would be enough time.
Thank you very much, William. Whoops. Sorry, my microphone was not on. Thank you very much. This is less a report and more of some reflections I'd like to make regarding my past 8 years, the last two quadrenniums, serving as a representative of the international agencies on the ICBI Executive Committee. Excuse me. Oh, those hats. I keep getting those hats mixed up on the Executive Committee of WBU. There are currently 19 international members of the World Blind Union that come from 10 countries. Some of them are umbrella organizations such as ICBI, IBSA, the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness. Others are individual direct service international technical assistance organizations. And the changes that I have observed over the past 8 years have, for the most part, been extremely positive. I believe the collaboration that WBU has established with its international partner members is growing each year, and the working relationships between WBU and its international partner members is growing. It's getting better. And quite honestly, I think we're all learning that we are achieving more through this collaboration. As I began to reflect on why or what's behind these changes, really three things come to mind. First of all, it's the leadership of WBU. Here I'm referring specifically to the table offices, but also to the regional chairs. There has been much, much more openness and willingness and desire to work with international partners on collaborative initiatives. The other significant factor that, at least in my opinion, has made this happen is the development and adoption of a strategic plan. Once WBU created a strategic plan, I believe everyone had a sense of, okay, we're all reading off the same sheet of music, so to speak. Finally, there are and have emerged over the last 8 years a number of issues that all of us can rally around. The Education for All campaign, the Right to Read initiative, the employment initiative of WBU, the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and most recently, efforts in the area of disaster preparedness. All of this led 5 years ago now, to the development of what is called the Vision Alliance, a collaboration of WBU with its partners IAPB and ICBI. The examples of this collaboration are almost too numerous to try to document all of them. So let me just give you a flavor, and let me just give you a sense of a few that I am particularly have been involved with and am aware of. I guess going back to the earliest stages of this collaboration, it's the Institutional Development Program, which currently involves WBU, the African Union of the Blind, working collaboratively with Perkins, Sight Savers International, and the Norwegian Association of the Blind and Partially Sighted. The Canadian National Institute for the Blind was one of the founding members and really one of the great stimulating forces in that initiative. And many of the African, young African leaders that are sitting in this room this afternoon are products of that institutional development program. The initiative, of course, that I am most familiar with is the Education for All Visually Impaired Children Global Campaign, which together we launched in 2006 with a number of international partners, and that list grows each year. Currently, Christoffel Blinden Mission, Sight Savers International, the National Organization of the Spanish Blind, Light for the World, Visio in the Netherlands, the Nippon Foundation, Perkins, the Francophone Blind Union, Vision Australia, and the Norwegian Association of the Blind and Partially Sighted are all working on a global initiative to try to bring down the barriers that are excluding millions of visually impaired children from going to schools in their own community. Now, granted, we're only working in less than a dozen countries now, but in that period of time, in the last 4 years, more than 50,000 children have come to school for the first time. And I think we now have adequate country models to be able to move that forward. And as we move it forward, I think our strategy will change somewhat so that we begin to work with some of the broader development agencies such as Save the Children, World Vision, Handicap International, and others that are working on the general education system in many developing countries. You heard this morning about the collaboration that was undertaken immediately following the disastrous earthquake in Haiti. That's another good example of where many organizations came together, shared ideas, resources, and worked with Michel Payan and his team in Haiti to try to be as effective in our response as we possibly could be. The final example that I want to use, and it's one that I hope those of you in a number of countries will maybe take a lesson from, and that is a recent collaborative assessment that the international... I also hope that not only have we saved our colleagues in Myanmar an awful lot of time and effort by meeting with them collaboratively, but that that is going to continue to foster a spirit of collaboration and working together as we move forward in Myanmar. So those are just a few examples of how the collaboration between WBU and its international members has strengthened enormously in the past 8 years that I've had the pleasure of representing the international agencies on the executive committee. So it's back to you, William.
Thank you, Larry. Listening to you, one gets a sense of progress and cohesiveness, but you help us to remember those that are still outside our fold, the many children that are not at school, and countries where we still have to make inroads. And thank you for that very comprehensive report. I'd like to welcome with us Ayiko Akiyama, Social Affairs Officer at the United Nations Economic and Social Commission for Asia and Pacific, UNSCAP. She's going to speak to us this afternoon on the INCO strategy meeting, which led to the development of the third decade on disability in Asia, 2013-22. Now, We have become very accustomed to these decades. The first one was the UN Decade of Disabled Persons, that was the name, 83 to 92. They followed two African decades, and in Asia Pacific, a third decade. This is telling us that this is a mechanism of getting things done, of progress, and of engaging with governments. And so we're very much looking forward to seeing what the results have been and what the expectations are in Asia Pacific. Aiko, if you'd please address us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson, and Sawadika. Konnichiwa, good afternoon to all of you. And I apologize, I don't know too many other languages. And I also apologize for my slight delay joining in this session. Hearing what Lali said, I mean, what Lali, you were talking about was a collaboration happening and taking place at the operational level, so to speak. So what I would like to share with you is Asia-Pacific policy initiative, so to speak. So I'd like to spend next 15 to 20 minutes doing so. Yes, what we learned from the past two decades is the lack of evidence-based policy development process. Well, as you know, Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities symbolize the culmination of all the disability advocacy and movements. That was a beautiful moment when it was adopted back in 2006 in New York, and then it went into force in 2008. So where our movement is going? Also, in our region, we had, as I said, and as Chairperson introduced, we had two consecutive regional decades of persons with disabilities. How has it been done? Okay, we said education has to be ensured for all. Accessibility has to be in place in everywhere. But the way it has been done, generally speaking, was really not focusing on generating data in terms of needs assessment and translating that assessment to policy needs and implement the policy and monitoring the implementation of policies in a quantitative manner. Also, just to begin with, now people say that average 15% of any given country are persons with diverse disabilities. But what we found out in our region is much less. We have gathered about more than 40 governments' self-reported prevalence on disability, average of which was less than 5%. So to begin with, to get counted, to count, we need to start with this accurate assessment of persons with disabilities in terms of statistics. All these things considered, we came up with what we call Incheon strategy. I'd like to explain more about it, but I also realized that I also need to give you a brief information about what I mean by Asia-Pacific region. Asia-Pacific region, in our understanding, in SCAP operation terms, covers 62 members and associate members. So in common sense, I mean, understanding of the geography, it covers countries including like Turkey, Iran, to the west side, and then Russian Federation, Central Asian countries, South Asian countries, Southeast Asian countries, and then you will also include what we call Oceania, like Fiji, Cook Islands, and so on and so forth. So we cover an area which consists 2/3 of the world population, largest area in the world. So we, as people say, estimate 650 million persons with disabilities live in this area. But the official report, sadly enough, is grossly underestimated. Now, I'd like to go back to this Incheon strategy. So the idea of Incheon strategy is to, hey, let's have something that will make and encourage governments to really count. Counting business for promote the realization of rights of persons with disabilities. The idea started about 2 years ago, but the serious drafting process of this Incheon strategy started in 2011 December. And I am happy to be able to report you that just 2 weeks ago on 2nd November in Incheon, Republic of Korea, this Incheon strategy was adopted by ministers of this region. I also like to underscore the fact that this Incheon strategy drafting process was participated by representatives of organizations of and for persons with disabilities, which of course include representatives from WBU. So the basic, the uniqueness of this Incheon strategy is that it applies a SMART approach. I know you guys, many of you are very smart, but this Incheon strategy also intends to apply this SMART approach. S stands for specific, M stands for measurable, A stands for actionable, R stands for, R is very hard for me as a Japanese to make a pronunciation. Am I doing a good job or not? Okay, sorry. This is not for my self-esteem building exercise, but anyway, R stands for relevant and T stands for time bound. And so this Incheon strategy has a structure of same structure as that of MDGs, which at this point and sadly does not make any specific reference to disability issues. And we know that after 2050, there is going to be an agenda on sustainable development. So our intention is that this Incheon strategy will make a contribution to that effort as well. The Incheon strategy has 10 goals, 27 targets, 62 indicators. So I'd like to do a quick run through of that Incheon strategy for the next 10 minutes. Sorry. Goal sounds more aspirational. So goal one says reduce poverty and enhance work and employment prospects. Goal two, promote participation in political processes and in decision making. Goal three says enhance access to the physical environment, public transportation, knowledge, information and communication. Goal four, strengthen social protection. Goal five, expand early intervention and education of children with disabilities. Goal six, ensure gender equality and women's empowerment. Goal seven, ensure disability inclusive disaster risk reduction and management. Goal eight, improve the reliability and comparability of disability data. Goal nine, accelerate the ratification and implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and the harmonization of national legislation with the Convention. Last but not least, Goal 10, advance sub-regional, regional, and inter-regional cooperation. So in terms of targets, maybe I should focus on the area of accessibility, which might be of a great relevance to your interest. Under the Goal 3, enhance access to the physical environment, public transportation, knowledge, information, and communication, we have four targets. Target 1, increase the accessibility of physical environment in the national capital that is open to the public. Number 2, target, enhance the accessibility and usability of public transportation. 3, enhance the accessibility and usability of information and communication services. 4, have the proportion of persons with disabilities who need but do not have appropriate assistive devices or products. Okay, so how do you measure the progress or the lack thereof? We have core indicators and supplementary indicators. Core indicators by nature refers to those which enable inter-country comparison. Supplementary indicators, on the other hand, in essence, in principle, allows in-country comparison over time or something very specific or something which, does not allow inter-country comparison, well, which the governments in the region did not agree to be as core indicators. So we have under accessibility 9 indicators, for example. So I just like to run through it if you allow me to do so. Number 1, proportion of accessible government buildings in the national capital. Number 2, proportion of accessible international airports. Number 3, proportion of daily captioning and sign language interpretation of public television news programs. Number 4, proportion of accessible and usable public documents and websites that meet internationally recognized accessibility standards. Proportion of persons with disabilities who need assistive devices or products and have them. But let me just stop right there. So in this document doesn't actually provide the technical standards of accessibility. So it's up to, at this point, I mean, this is going to be a discussion of the working group, which is going to be started next, middle of next year to have some procedure, to discuss on some procedural issues. But what do we mean by accessible government buildings? International accessibility standards. What do you include when we say assistive devices and products? Those are the kind of things that we actually need to think about it from your viewpoint from today, for example. So supplementary indicators, 1, 2, 3, 4, we have. Availability of government access audit programs that requires the participation of experts with disabilities. Availability of mandatory technical standards for barrier-free access that govern the approval of all designs for buildings that could be used by members of the public, taking into consideration of ISO, international standards such as ISO. Number of sign language interpreters, availability of mandatory technical standards for barrier-free access that govern all of ICT-related services, such as websites for the public, taking into consideration of standards such as those of ISOs. So that's just a quick run through of the Goal 3, concentrating on accessibility, targets, and indicators. At least 3 times within the next course of 10 years, we will have the data provided by the governments. So what does it relate to you? Of course, first of all, we like your members at the national level really push the governments to collect accurate data on those indicators. We don't want the data that does not reflect lived reality of persons with disabilities. Number two, this interim strategy will have the working group which consists of governments and then representatives of CSOs, which would give us guidance on how to track progress of this implementation of Incheon strategies. WBU represent, I think, they nominated themselves to be part of these working groups, and we will see what happens at the next commission taking place next spring. But then I say that you will be an integral part of this process. So once again, I really like to welcome your continuing participation in this process. So I think what I really like to emphasize at the end of my brief presentation is we are now in this region in the business of counting. Get counted to count is my message. And for those who are from outside of Asia Pacific, I like to, you know, welcome your inter-regional inspiration on this serious business of counting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Aiko, for that smart presentation. I compliment you on the goals you have set in terms of access, and you referred to sign language. And I think the time has come that governments and media should be also including the parallel to blind people of audio description. And that might be something you'd like to take to your consultants. You mentioned the question of counting. And as we all know, the World Disability Report has increased the international figure for disability to 15%. We've learned a very interesting lesson in South Africa, which is my country. In our previous census, we asked the question, do you have a disability? And if you said yes, what is that disability? And based on that, we thought we knew that there were around about 1% of blind people in the country. Last year we had a new census and we changed the question. Do you have a difficulty seeing? And there were three levels of that. And now the figures jumped to 11%. So it depends very much on the question you ask. And we need to mistrust the figures produced by censuses and by governments. The real figures are higher than that. Okay. We are now going to get a response to Aiko's presentation from the WBU Asia Pacific Regional President, Daitu Kula Segaran. Our friend Kula, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A very good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you also to Aiko for explaining the background of the Incheon strategy. Let me, first of all, express my gratitude to ESCAP, the organization from which Aiko comes, for having given Asia Pacific region full opportunity to participate right up to the ministerial meeting in Incheon, in the formulation, in the drafting, in the inputs, which ultimately resulted in the passage of the ministerial declaration and the strategy. I must say that it was a very exciting experience for the region, and I'm glad to report that many of the proposals, amendments which had been proposed by the alliance of 15 CSOs, which included the Asia-Pacific region, were adopted by the ministers in the ultimate formulation of the strategy. This was a fine example of how organizations representing persons with disabilities, either at the regional level or at the global level, working together to formulate a common platform, can have full support not only of the persons we represent, but also of our counterparts, the governments of our regions and governments of the global bodies. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the kind of partnership which must continue. And what it means to the AP region is this, that if we continue to work as a team, as an alliance, and in this case the 15 CSOs have now acquired an additional 4 CSOs who are prepared to work as part of the team, as part of the alliance, then we will be able to make headway not only in the implementation of the Incheon strategy, but indeed in getting greater and greater progress towards making the right real for persons with disabilities. Asia Pacific region has been in the forefront of formulating decade for people with persons with disabilities. And this Incheon strategy for 2013 to 2022 is the third decade. As Ms. Akiyama explained, the strategy has incorporated within it several mechanisms which will enable progress to be measured. The 10 goals, the 27 targets, and the 49 indicators are means of measuring progress on a time basis from year 1, 2013, to midpoint 2017, on to the end of the decade, 2022. In addition, the Incheon strategy has incorporated a working group made up of 30 representatives, 15 from governments, and 15 from CSOs. This, I think, is a major breakthrough in the partnership between government and persons with disabilities to take our agenda forward. The 15 CSOs which we went forward as an alliance with one platform have indicated their intention to the government representatives and to ASCAP to be part of the 15 members representing CSOs in that working group. The ultimate selection of the 15 members of the working group will be left, of course, to the Commission when it meets next year. I am personally confident that the Asia Pacific region will be one of the 15. And this is really what it means for us in this region to be able to put forward our agenda in a meaningful fashion in order to make the right real. That is the theme, that is the motto, that is the objective of the Incheon strategy, to make the right real. Ladies and gentlemen, I do not propose to take you through the 10 goals. Although Ms. Akiyama dealt with only one goal, the third one, which is on accessibility, the document is now a public document accessible to all of us. But let me just explain that the value to this region, as I said, is spelled out in very great detail in each of the goals and the targets under each of those goals and in the indicators. For example, under goal 1, to reduce poverty and enhance work and employment prospects, the objective is the decade must see greater progress in reducing poverty among persons with disabilities and their families. The majority of persons with disabilities are disproportionately poorer, more disadvantaged, and often excluded from society. Having a decent job and the necessary education, training, and support to keep the job is one of the best means of overcoming poverty. Those who can and want to work must therefore be better supported, protected, and equipped to do so. This requires more accommodating labor markets, lifting persons with disabilities and their families out of poverty would contribute to the achievement of inclusive growth and sustainable development. This was put forward as the first goal because this is a fundamental requirement, fundamental to the status of all of us. If we are to make a meaningful contribution to life for ourselves, for our families, and our communities. Now, ladies and gentlemen, goal two, promote participation in political process and decision making, it speaks for itself. Goal three, enhance access, which has been dealt with at length. Goal four, strengthen social protection. I need to say a little bit more about this. Social protection coverage in developing countries of Asia and the Pacific is often only available to those with regular employment contracts, in the formal sector, leaving the vast majority of the population, especially persons with disabilities, without sufficient coverage. It is therefore critical to mainstream a disability perspective in general social protection schemes and to promote further the social protection floor with a focus on healthcare and basic income protection for all, in particular persons with disabilities. Goal five, expand early intervention and education of children with disabilities. Goal six, ensure gender equality and women's empowerment. Goal seven, ensure disability inclusive disaster risk reduction. Goal eight, improve the reliability and comparability of disability data. Goal nine, accelerate the ratification and implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and harmonization of national legislation with the Convention. And goal 10, advance sub-regional, regional, and international cooperation. I would like to report under goal 10 that we, the CSOs, were able, with the help of governments, and particularly Senator Monti and Muntan, to get the ministers to agree to the creation of a multi-donor trust fund under the management of the UNSCAP. For us, that was a major, major need. And we are very grateful to the governments, particularly, as I said, to Senator Mantin Wuntan for putting it forward on our behalf, and to the governments of Australia and China and Japan for their support in the course of the ministerial meeting. I'm proud to say that all these governments which supported our initiatives are governments of the Asia-Pacific region, which goes to show that we are living in a region of enlightened governments, and that augurs well for the future. We have assured the ministers that the CSOs will make available their fullest resources and give their fullest cooperation to making the Incheon strategy a success. Ladies and gentlemen, it now is left to all of us to ensure that the goals and the targets and the indicators are met. I urge all affiliates of WBUAP to participate fully on the national, sub-regional, and regional levels in achieving these goals. We must work hard and be confident in achieving the goal in order to make the right real. Let me just conclude by also placing on record the appreciation and gratitude of the region to the staff of UNSCAP especially the Deputy Executive Director, Mr. Morata, the Director of Social Department, Madam Nanda Krashish, Madam Sun Yun Wah, and none other than Ms. Aiko Akiyama, who is here on the stage with us. They were very, very supportive of our needs at the meeting and helped us with putting forward our concerns to the ministerial delegates. And finally, I must also place on record the region's gratitude to the 14 of the CSOs who joined hands with us in putting forward the Common Flat Platform. We have to bear in mind that Asia-Pacific region has 650 million persons with disabilities, and it means that we need the support of all of you and all the people out there to work hand in hand to make the Incheon strategy a success. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Kula. And we certainly have come a long way since the international decade and the World Program of Action, which was little more than a list of measures for governments to consider, to a decade with definite goals and measurables. And hopefully those measurables will see very real progress in this important decade. So thank you, both of those presenters. We now move forward to messages. Much has been said in this conference about partnerships and the taking hands between organizations. And one of the great achievements of Marianne's presidency has been the strengthening of our partnerships. And we like to hear from them at our General Assemblies, and we're going to have three messages this afternoon. The first will be from the International Agency for the Prevention of Blindness, its CEO, Peter Ackland. Peter, thank you.
Thank you, William. Ladies and gentlemen, friends and colleagues, and I hope future friends and colleagues, I just want to extend my warmest greetings from my colleagues within International Agency for Prevention of Blindness. It's a great privilege to be here on the panel this afternoon. And we wish both the World Blind Union and the International Council for the Education of Visually Impaired a successful General Assembly. Both organizations were at IAPB's General Assembly in Hyderabad just a couple of months ago, and we enjoyed a fruitful and very illuminating and eventful few days there. The World Blind Union was actually a founder member of IAPB in 1975. And the World Blind Union, your president, Arnt Holter, still sits on as a trustee on our board. And we look forward to the continuation of that sort of relationship in the future. And I would just like to extend my thanks and a sincere thank you for the decision this morning that IAPB would be a part of the WBU executive going forward. Another example of the partnership that Marianne, as outgoing president, has really nurtured over the last 4 years, and something that I know we at IAPB have really welcomed and valued. Thank you, Marianne. For those of you who don't know about IAPB, let me just say, and secondly, to maintain and improve the health of visually impaired people. One of the things that we think is particularly important is the Vision Alliance. And much has been spoken about this over the last day or so. And Larry just earlier talked about some of the things we're doing. I won't repeat what he said, but I just want to talk briefly about something that we hope the three organizations will be able to achieve together going forward. And that's around the next generation of the Millennium Development Goals. Now, as you know, the current Millennium Development Goals, the eight of them, were established in the year 2000 and they run through till 2015. But one thing that's, I think, a serious omission in the current MDGs is what it says about people with disabilities. And even the UN itself is very aware of this shortfall. And in 2009, the UN General Assembly actually passed a resolution, 64131, all about people with disabilities and the current Millennium Development Goals. And its opening paragraph said, the UN expresses its grave concern that persons with disabilities are often subject to multiple or aggravated forms of discrimination and can be largely invisible in the implementation, monitoring, and evaluation of the Millennium Development Goals. So that's the UN admitting itself that its own Millennium Development Goals are invisible and say nothing about the people with disabilities. So this is something I would suggest that we have to change in the next generation of MDGs. And this is something that the Vision Alliance is currently working on. And I think we have three things in our tool bag that enable us to present a much stronger case going forward. Firstly, we have obviously the UN Convention on the Rights of People with Disability, a clear exposition of what rights we are entitled to. Secondly, we have the World Health Organization and the World Bank's Disability Report. And as William mentioned, this gives a figure of 1 billion people in the world, 1/7 of the world's population living with some form of disability. So this is a major constituency, a constituency that cannot, should not, and must not be ignored in the next generation of the Millennium Development Goals. And thirdly, we have the highly authoritative WHO, ILO, and UNESCO CBR guidelines, which give us an outline of what practically we need to do to address the current situation. So I believe with these things and other things, we'll be able to present a much clearer case for why in the next round of goals we must include people with disabilities and have some very clear targets about what needs to be done. So certainly as IAPB, we pledge to make our effort and join with the other members of the Vision Alliance to secure that. So I look forward to future discussions on that and many other things. And again, wish you all the well for a very successful General Assembly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. Our second message will be delivered by our President, Marianne, on behalf of the World Federation of the Deaf Blind. And we were all saddened earlier in the year when the President, Lex Grandier, passed away. So they are under new leadership. Cannot be represented with us today, and so we call on Marianne to present their message. Marianne?
Thank you. Sorry, can you hear me? Yes. Thank you, William. I was delivered a message to present to you. So it begins, dear friends of the World Blind Union, it is an honour to speak with you as the current president of the World Federation of Deaf Blind. My name is Sonia Villacres Maggi from Latin America, living in Ecuador. Warm greetings from WFDB. I had all intentions to attend your event, however, for different reasons, it was not possible, and I have asked Marianne Diamond to present my respects so that I can be with you to remember our friendship, brotherhood, and solidarity. The deafblind people are known in the world, as a minority group. However, our needs and rights are compelling amongst organisations of disability. We included in both organisations of the blind and for the deaf, and only a decade ago we became an independent group to fight for our own rights and recognition in the world. WFDB is a young, dynamic federation that wants to participate and have our place of honour within the efforts, thanks to the efforts of our past presidents, Mr. Steg Olsen from Sweden and Mr. Lex Grandier from Denmark. We have been recognised internationally as an independent federation of our own dignity, identity, confidence within the disability movement. Our needs are many and difficult to achieve. We have to fight for respect in all societies of the world and work slowly and firmly so that deafblindness is recognised as a unique disability of our own, aspirations to achieve access to society. Being deafblind is not simple for the person or for the family. It represents so many challenges and efforts to proceed in a more complex and developing world where achievements of success are evaluated and measured every year. Even that we are a minority group, there are many of us throughout the world. Unfortunately, we are hidden in our homes or within other groups where our needs and rights are ignored. In developing countries, so many of our deafblind brothers and sisters are labelled intellectually challenged, psychosocial or other disabilities and not recognised as deafblind with its important needs for access. There is a low understanding among authorities to what it means to be deafblind and the impact on our human rights and individual ability to obtain those rights. I appreciate our champions in the world who fight to help us achieve our rights and walk in the same path as others where our rights can be defined. The deafblind person's needs are many and costs are high, especially to have a guide, interpreter, to provide the link to communication, information and mobility. These persons need to be trained and supported to truly assist us achieve our aspirations as human beings and to realise our own identity. For that, the World Federation of Deafblind fights and will continue to fight to support our deafblind brothers and sisters to achieve the sacred rights of all people to be alive, to be educated, communicative, healthy, to have friends and family, and in the end, to be happy. Again, congratulations to the WBU for achieving its growing social justice that has developed over many years under different leaders and plans. We send our best wishes and congratulations and wish your continued work to achieve absolute rights for all blind people worldwide. We wish that the new board of directors and the executive council all success, and we hope to continue with you, our brothers and sisters, as we work to, as an example of your tenacity and persistence, of what one day can be achieved, the same justice for deafblind people and their families. From the bottom of our hearts, a big hug to all of you. Hooray for WBU. Sincerely yours, Dr. Sonia Margarita Villacres Maggi. Thank you very much.
Marianne, thanks for delivering to us that truly inspirational message from the new president of WFDB. Many in this room, and I include myself in those, have benefited from sport, not only in terms of fitness, but in terms of all the social contacts it brings for us. And so we are always delighted to have contact with the International Blind Sports Association, and this afternoon to receive a message from their president, Michael Barreda. Michael, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairman William, Madam President Marion Diamond, and the officers of the World Blind Union and the ICVI. Fellow delegates, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, greetings from the International Blind Sports Federation. I'd like to take this opportunity, first of all, to congratulate and thank the local organizing committee for conducting such a huge and tremendous event, and of course the volunteers for their assistance and the warm hospitality we've been given by the Thai people during our stay here. IBSAN now is 31 years old and is recognized as the international body on sports for the promotion and development of sports for the blind and partially sighted, with 116 member nations across the five continents. I have been involved with IBSAN now for almost 14 years, beginning as a participant, competing as an athlete myself back in 1998 in the Madrid, the first World Games, Madrid Games, and went on to become the chairman of the Asian Continental Region and became president in 2005 up to the present, succeeding the WBU Secretary General Enrique Perez. Through the years, IBSA has been guided and driven by its vision of empowering blind and partially sighted athletes to allow them to achieve optimum sporting performance while creating awareness. As such, IBSA has been involved in planning, coordinating, and organizing continental and world sporting events. And we have had four now World Games. We had the first one, as I mentioned, in Madrid in 1998. Then we had the Quebec Games in 2003. We had Sao Paulo, Brazil in 2007. And last year in Antalya, Turkey, 2011, where we had an average of about 1,000 to 1,200 athletes participating in these games. And we've had, of course, participation in the Paralympic Games over the years, where we had 1,100 participating in the recently concluded and very successful London Paralympic Games. We've had six youth and student games participate by an average of about 300 to 400 young athletes. And we've had, of course, quite a number of regional sports in the five continents. So if you look at it, really, the IBSA has been doing its part in so far as elite sports or the elite level of sports is concerned. However, in 2010, IBSA felt it was the need to review its relevance, its role in the overall scheme of sports, especially for the blind and partially sighted. And after consultations with our member countries, our sports chairs and other stakeholders during a strategic exercise or planning exercise in Manila, we all agreed that there was a need for us to look at the 99% others that participate in sports and physical fitness or recreation activities and do not make it to the 1 or 2% level of elite sports or competitions. And because of this, we felt that we should redefine our vision, where we we envision a world in which blind or partially sighted people can fulfill their dreams through sport for life. And now it would be our aim to be able to reach out and empower blind and partially sighted athletes, those that are, of course, part of the what we call the grassroots level, the children, the young adults, women, even the elderly, to educate them, to promote to them the many benefits and values such as discipline, camaraderie, fair play, perseverance, that can be derived through. Of course, we won't be able to accomplish this because of the enormous resources needed to do so. We won't be able to accomplish this unless we work and continue our collaboration and look at the implementation of our provisions stated in our Memorandum of Understanding with the World Blind Union, especially the enforcement of the UNCRPD, and of course to be able to identify specific projects that we can work hand in hand with ICVI, for example, working with teachers, educators, parents, and the like, through maybe the sharing of our technical expertise in the field of sport, through training the trainer courses and seminars. And we hope that we will be able to achieve this. And for those that may want to listen to further discussions on the matter, please join us during the parallel session on Thursday when we discuss the when we have the session on sports and physical fitness. So I'd like you all to know that IBSA stands committed to the theme, in line with the theme of this General Assembly. We stand committed towards the achievement or achieving our collective vision through empowerment and partnerships. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Tremendous progress even since your presidency. We've got about 10 or 12 minutes for comments and questions until the election announcements. I'd like to appeal to you to keep your question or comment to about 30 seconds so we can have a few questions. Right. Hold up your card and we will recognize you for questions and comments. Equatorial Guinea.
Gracias.
Thank you, Chairman. I know it's I've been asking for the floor all day today. Thank you, Chairman, for giving me the floor today. I would very much like to value this question of sports, this issue on sports, and I'd also like to talk about culture, because it's not just a question of competing, it's not a question of just winning a medal or possibly get some fame for the blind athlete, but I think it also helps his self-esteem. I would like to congratulate all of the speakers and I'd like to say something to the Asia-Pacific representative. He said yesterday that we have rights. Yes, we don't just have rights. We have values, and we're worth it. Congratulations. Congratulations to all speakers, and thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh, just a final thing, if you allow me to say a final point. Both for sports, we talked this morning about the need of quotas, that everybody needs to pay their dues. And the problems we may have with national organizations, the problems of where we, if natural disasters, when people don't know where we are. Sometimes we're a little bit abandoned. So in all of this, I would like to say a recommendation to the UMC, a recommendation. In our countries, it would be really good that we would feel the warmth of the UMC directly. It's not the same you send an email or a document to a national member rather than getting a visit from somebody of the UMC, so that everyone, not just the representatives, but everyone else knows that the UMC has come to see us. And I think we can do a lot of things. We can speak in favor. We can ask for politicians to talk to us. So if we get somebody from the UMC come to our country, I'm sure that you would be able to move a lot in our own country. Thank you.
That was a comment. Very welcome. Next. India.
Thank you. Not quite India, but India also. A.K. Mittal.
Okay, you have the floor.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the ASCAP region, a question, a very short and quick question for the UN ASCAP officer. The ASCAP region has had 2 decades. Beijing Proclamation 1993-2002, Bamako Millennium Framework for Action 2003-2012, and now we have a third one coming up. Most welcome. However, while framing the strategy for the third decade, has the progress made during the preceding ones taken into account? Any special lessons learned? If so, what? Or is it just a mechanical continuation into the third decade? Thank you.
Good question, thank you. Let's hear Aiko first. Yes, Aiko.
Okay, thank you very much for your very...
Have we learned from the previous decades, and if so, what?
Very poignant questions. Well, of course, it's not meant to be a mechanical continuation. Well, one of the lessons learned is, as I said in my presentation, the relative lack of attention to disability data correction. That's why we said that this Incheon strategy really emphasizes on inducing governments to collect data, which hopefully would measure the situation of persons with disabilities in different areas. So that's the major lesson, one of the major lessons learned from the last 2 decades. And another thing is that, as you might have witnessed yourself, yes, we kept on saying rights realization, blah, 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 blah. But then it's very hard to implement that. We are promoting it, but the difficulty is for governments to really prioritize issues of persons with disabilities. The lack of a political will or attention, so that even though the right kind of legislation is submitted to the legislative body, that it's not really being discussed for many years or so. So another lesson learned is that really we need to really motivate governments to more prioritize the issues of persons with disabilities. So one of the things that we think of doing that one of the contributing.
I could briefly, please.
Is to bring attention of population aging. Yep. Whereby we are
hoping to succeed in motivating governments to pay more attention to disability issues. We can have more discussions during the break.
Thank you. Maybe the big lesson learned from the previous decade is let's have another decade. So, okay. Further questions? Is it India?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Asia.
Yes, Dr. Adin Aneja, member Indian delegation representing All India Confederation of Nine. My comment and questions are directed to Nehru. Nehru, today is a very important day for WBUICVI because through a constitutional amendment, ICVI has become an international member of the executive. My memories go back to the 2004 executive of ICVI in Malaysia, where I was representing the then president of WBU, K.K. Nordstrom, and the idea of this kind was originated there. And today there seems to be some kind of combination. My question to you is, Larry, after this development, after the WBU and ICEVI have been partnering for the last 8-9 years, with some good results. But after this change today, after today's development, how do you envision a change in terms of action as far as this relationship is concerned? What is going to be material which was not there? What would be achieved which couldn't be achieved through partnership, number one? Number two, you talked about the EFAVI campaign. We were together in Malaysia for that in 2006 too. I think during one of these days, somebody had mentioned that around 50,000 children had been brought to school to the EFAVI campaign. Now, I'm a friend of ICVI, so the question should not be taken in a negative way.
Keep it brief, please.
Yeah, I'm a friend of yours too, Nehru. But the question is that there would be a development in enrollment of VI children in school anyway. If you take the figures from the year 2000 to 2006, there would have been some change in figures. How do you distinguish between an increase of enrollment in school for VI children between 2006 and 2013, which would have otherwise taken place and which can be specifically attributed to the EFAVI campaign? I hope I'm clear on that.
I think best it would be to ask Marianne to answer that question.
I'd just like to make a comment, and I might hand to Larry to answer the specific question about numbers. But in the what I would like to say about the concept of our partnership and why it is are just a couple of important points. One is IAPB and ICEVI have always had representation from WBU on their board and executive, but we haven't necessarily had that of those organisations. So this is about a recognition of our alliance and our partnerships. Yes, we've worked together on Education for All Vision Impairment since 2006 with ICEVI, but as you will see this week, we want educators of the educators and parents, all those who play a really significant role in the children who are blind about their own personal beliefs and expectations, to hear from us, be part of us, listen to us, because we are a very powerful body as role models in the field to support them and them us. So I think that we can only grow that partnership beyond Education for All Vision Impairment and be influencing what they do in all other aspects and them learning from us. And I think that's really important. And Saturday, for those who are going to be here and registered, the 17th, I think it is, the date, there is a full day dedicated to building and growing the Education for All Vision Impairment strategy so that we can roll it out in a lot more countries. And one of the other things I'll just hand to Larry after this, I'll say, is that it's really important for our regions, the regions of the WBU, to become active and partnering with the regions of ICEVI to make that happen. Thank you. Larry, would you like to answer the question about the actual numbers?
Yeah, I just want to make one additional comment on the partnership. Frankly, I don't think it's going to change substantially our working relationship. I think it's an area of kind of mutual respect to have a voice on each other's boards. But I do feel that one of the weakest aspects of the campaign thus far is the fact that we have not been able at the national level to engage the national organizations of the blind as effectively as we could and should. Because you are out there on the front lines, you have the voice to call attention to the issue along with parents. Regarding the issue of numbers, Anil, those numbers are simply the numbers in specific countries where we have been engaged with the government in training programs that have led to planned initiatives to expand access to education. It doesn't reflect. There would be a natural inclination, you're absolutely right, a natural increase beyond that 50,000. That the 50,000 are children who were specifically brought to school, most for the first time, through very specific project initiatives under the Education for All initiative. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair?
No, sorry.
Mr. Chair, can I? This is S.K. Rungta, not.
Sorry, can I say? Yes.
One very quick comment.
Sorry. You don't have the floor. We actually have to keep to the program at this point. We still have quite a bit of business to do up till 4 o'clock. And so I would appeal to you to take this offline with Larry and Marianne. There are also actually several others. I heard voices right at the back on the right that we would have liked to have recognized, but we out of time. That's the way of congresses. Now, those of us who listen to radio, usually around the world, at this moment there would be a trumpet or something to indicate election results. Sorry, we don't have that today. Sorry, my chair just wanted to. Let me just, yeah? Okay. Michael, if you keep it to 20 seconds.
Okay, no, just that, I forgot this. Being an Asian myself, I come from the Philippines. I just wanted to know my fellow Asians here that the next World Games in 2015 will definitely be held in Asia, just for the benefit of...
Well done. Okay. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for being with us. I'm now going to give the floor to our electoral officer, the returning officer, Stephen King.
Thank you, William. So to remind you, my name is Stephen King, and I'm your returning officer. And I'm here to give you the results of the ballot. That thank you all very much for your hard work and patience for sticking to the rules and voting. It appears to have run very smoothly, so thank you for that. And to give you the results. So first I'm going to give you the results of the position of Secretary General. And if you remember, we have two candidates, Paul Tezanu and Rina Prasarani. And the total number of votes present, we had one small adjustment on appeal. So it's changed very, very slightly from the figures that were given to you by William earlier on. The total number of votes present was 222, and the total number of eligible proxies was 92. So the total number of eligible votes today was 314. The total number of votes cast was 298. There were no spoilt ballots, so we had 298 eligible votes. The results are Paul Tezanu, 87. Rina Prasarani, 211. I declare I therefore declare that Rina Prasarani is elected as the World Blind Union's Secretary General. Thank you. I now turn our attention to the election for First Vice President. You will recall that we had three candidates, Donatella Kamimba, Francis Kandiru, and Frederick Schroeder. Exactly the same number of votes present, 222. The total number of proxies was 92, meaning that we had 314 eligible votes. The total number of votes cast was 299. The total number of spoilt ballots was 2. So the total number of eligible votes was 301. The voting results are as follows. Donatella Kamimba, 28. Francis Kandiru, 128. Frederick Schroeder, 143. So wait for the decision. So the decision is that we must have a second election for this post because of a runoff between Frederick Schroeder and Francis Kandiru, as neither candidate achieved 50% of the total votes earned. So tomorrow, when we run the votes for the second...
Attention, please. Attention. Okay.
Yeah. So tomorrow, at the scheduled time for us running the election for the second vice president, we will also be running the runoff for the first vice president. So as we had today, we will have two elections at the same time. So tomorrow will be very important. I should also tell you that the nominations for the second vice president role closes at 6 o'clock this evening. So positions for second vice president is still open until 6 o'clock this evening. That is the end of my report. Thank you very much.
Just your attention for a minute or two more. Okay. Thank you. Also at the back on the right, please. Thank you. We'd like to congratulate Rina Prasarani on this achievement. A wonderful day for you, Rina. Good luck with your role as Secretary General. That concludes this session, and I'd like to thank those who brought messages, as well as Larry for his report, and the two speakers on the ESCAP decade. We break. Oh, yes. Okay. Sorry. I don't have the reason, but I take there is a good reason. So I'm going to give the floor to two people. First of all, to Alan Sutty.
Thank you. I'm sure you can't really stand the excitement after the election, but there is more excitement to come because, of course, tomorrow we will be considering some of the resolutions. I'm pleased to say that the resolutions are virtually in the final stages of being produced. Our expectation is that they will be available from 6 o'clock tonight. Now, I know some of you have difficulty sleeping, and if that's the case, you may want some bedtime reading. So we will try and ensure that the resolutions are available for pickup from 6 o'clock on level M from the material collection point, and will be available up until 7 o'clock tonight. And if you prefer to sleep tonight, then you can collect them first thing tomorrow. Now, I do need to tell you that the resolutions will be available in two batches. The first batch were the resolutions that we received before the General Assembly, and you can collect these and they will be available in large print in English, Spanish, and French, and in English Braille. The second batch, which are the ones which are only received during the General Assembly, will be available to collect in English large print and in Braille. So please keep your fingers crossed that we have them available for collection from 6 o'clock from the material collection point. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen, and well done with the progress in your work. Monty, and I will hand to you in a moment. I just want to remind everybody that there will be regional meetings at 4:30. Please pay attention, regional meetings at 4:30. They will be on the floor below, one floor down. On this floor? Okay.
On this floor, President.
Yes. On this floor, ABU in room 1, AFUB in room 2, WBU Asia Pacific in room 3, EBU in 4, and ULAC in 5. International.
North American Caribbean room 6.
That must be 6. Can you see? Yeah, it's room 6. Room 6 is internationals.
North America, Caribbean.
Oh, no. North America, Caribbean is room 6. It doesn't seem like the internationals have a meeting.
The internationals aren't meeting, Marianne?
Okay.
For the international member, it's room side. Tip. That's a name in Thai. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Montien, I'll hand to you now for the closing remarks of the session, and just give us that information as well, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a few announcements. For those who are interested in music tonight, it begins at 6 o'clock in the park. On your way to the park, at the Park View restaurant, you can pick up your joyful drinks. We have prepared about 800 glasses. So only those with badge will be given the drink. Okay? For Asia Pacific delegates, after the regional meeting, TAB is going to host a welcome reception, it's a reception after the meeting, regional meeting, at room 3314, that's the TAB suite. For those who are interested in social tour, we have prepared one special day in Pattaya. Now, I wonder if any of you have not heard of the word Pattaya before. Pattaya is a very famous tourist city in Thailand. We have a special day in Pattaya where you can get a chance to learn about Thailand's educational system, especially a residential school for the blind there, as well as enjoy the Nong Nut Garden, which is very famous for its large collection of plants and as well as its Thai cultural show. Please book your seat at the Siam Express counter on the M floor. And I was told that the price will be only $60 per person. We have limited seats, and the tour will be on Saturday. Thank you very much.
Montien, one more thing. I'm being asked from various directions, please repeat the international members' meeting room.
For the international members' meeting room, it will be in room Sai Tip, which is in Thai. Okay, the name Sai Tip, that's a different room. You want me to repeat all six rooms?
No, just that one.
Okay. So just international members.
We've got it. Thanks. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Enjoy tea and coffee, everybody. Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes the afternoon session for today. They're going to be breaking into their regional meetings at 4:30. We are not going to be streaming any of that.
Darn tootin', not going to stream it.
All attention, please. Ladies and gentlemen, please take care of your belongings, especially the headphone, because we have to move to the regional meeting, right? So take on off your belongings with yourselves. Especially the headphone that you have to return at end of the day. Thank you for your kind attention.